Today's podcast is made possible by Syntec, a leading distributor of technology brands in South Africa, which include Orico computer peripherals. The Orico brand is built on the design and manufacture of innovative peripherals that simplify your workspace. Whether you're working from home or at the office, Orico has the solutions to streamline your workspace. Orico products are available online from Takealot.com.
Hello everybody, welcome to a new week and welcome to another edition of the AfriCast. My name is Clinton Matos. Joining me today is Brandon Lotz.
Hello.
And Robin Chetty.
Howdy.
How are you guys doing this week? It's gotten very cold.
Yeah, it's too cold. I'm camped out in front of a heater pretty much all day, every day these days.
Oh, you're not allowed to do that, Brandon. Eskom's going to come for you.
What? So I must stop using electricity so that they can switch off my electricity.
Yep.
So that I don't have electricity so that we can continue having electricity.
That's
have I got that right?
In this country. Okay. Yes. Don't you know that's how it works? And you, Robin?
I got an appointment with Builder's Warehouse this weekend to get all the gas for my heater. I'm definitely not paying extra money to Eskom.
Gas freaks me out because in America so many people die of it. I know it's not the same in South Africa, but yeah, gas has always been sketchy. But let's put that at the back of our minds. Let's talk about some news quick, and then we're going to get into our main topic of some new terms of services around YouTube, which are happening to South Africa at the end of this month. I'm going to start us off with UNISA. Oh, it feels like we talk about UNISA far too much. So they have now delayed first assignments into June. This is actually the third time that these same assignments have been delayed. They were delayed until 12th May and then 24th May and now into 7th June. So it's been almost a month of delays. And this isn't just the school, you know, handing out delays willy-nilly. For those who don't know, the registrations had big problems at UNISA and the registrations were themselves delayed. And then some students found themselves finally registered, but then they had to submit an assignment within a few days. Saw a lot of horror stories of that, where students were given 1 day, 2 days, sometimes a week. And these first assignments are usually very large. I just finished at UNISA last year, but when I was there, I don't know if it's changed since then. When I was there, for most modules, your first assignment, even if it isn't for any marks towards your module, which is the name they give to subjects, even if it isn't for any marks, if you don't submit that first assignment, you automatically fail the module for that semester. And they never really said why, but the logic behind it was that lots of people register and they even pay to be registered, but then they just never turn up for anything. They never turn up for their mandatory assignments or anything like that. So the school wanted to say, this is kind of the students proving to us that they have registered and they are ready to actually take the course that they registered for. And if they don't submit their first assignment, they fail. I don't know if that's still how it works, but the thing is, you still need to submit your assignments to get the best marks possible. And now they've had to give a third delay, a third extension to this. So we'll see if another extension happens. You can read my story about this. All the stories we mentioned will be linked under the podcast. And you can just see there's a lot more factors going into this. But for the sake of time, I'll just say check out the story. And there was also a whole nother kettle of fish where the hashtag useless UNISA was trending on Twitter for a while. And there's still some tweets around that. So yeah, it's been a train wreck. And I'm so glad I'm out of there. And we're going to talk about something kind of dystopian next. Brandon, you want to tell us about Amazon?
Yeah.
Bought something for lots of money.
Yeah, not that much money, actually. It's $8.45 billion Amazon paid to acquire Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, or you might know them as MGM. they announced the news this week. There's been rumors all week that they were going to be acquiring MGM, but we got confirmation yesterday directly from Amazon. As you might be aware, MGM has over 4,000 films in its archives, including classics like Basic Instinct, Silence of the Lambs, and I don't know, the small little spy series that's been going on for forever called James Bond. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it. I haven't really been bothered, but apparently it's quite popular.
Apparently.
And what is impressive to me, though, is that they have over 17,000 TV shows, which is quite a lot of TV when you think about it. And while Amazon could have said how it saw that there was some, like, great strategy that they could have had with this purchase and whatever, no, they didn't say that. They were quite blatant that the real financial value behind this deal is the treasure trove of IP and the deep catalog that we plan to reimagine and develop together with MGM's talented team. That's from Senior Vice President of Prime Video and Amazon Studios, Mike Hopkins. And it's actually a very interesting point that he raises, is that, like, they have this catalog of stuff. But, I mean, Amazon Prime isn't really lacking content or wanting for content. Just looking at some of their Amazon originals, Good Omens was really good. Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan, got to get it right, was pretty good. And I think the latest one was Invincible, which was excellent. I don't know if they wanting for content, but I mean, given that everybody is trying to one up every other streaming platform these days, I suppose having the most content possible and being able to take content away from other streaming services is really valuable. So we'll see how this plays out. I'm expecting some additions to Amazon Prime Video, hopefully soon. Even though, as I mentioned, it's not a platform that's lacking content. There's a lot of stuff that you can watch on there, including some older movies, stuff that you can't find on the likes of Netflix and Showmax and what have you. So, yeah, keep an eye out on that. If you aren't an Amazon Prime subscriber and you're a fan of classic movies or things like the Black Panther, what else was there? Poltergeist. And things like Vikings and The Handmaid's Tale, then might want to consider a subscription.
Worth noting that some people have thought, oh, James Wan's going to go directly to Amazon Prime Video. That might not be the case. I'm just trying to find the quote here before I misquote someone. But as you guys know, or I'm sure most people know, the Broccoli family own the James Bond license.
Their name is their surname is Broccoli.
Yes,
like the vegetable. Yes,
Albert R. Yes. Broccoli.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think it's his daughter or granddaughter, I can't remember off the top of my head, but Barbara Broccoli is kind of the head honcho and has final say in a lot of this. And she gave a quote to Variety saying, "We are committed to continuing to make James Bond films for the worldwide theatrical audience." So it seems that even though Amazon now has the rights to James Bond in some capacity, the Broccoli family still has final say on everything. I mean, again, I'll let people Google this. I'll put a link to the Variety article, but nothing can happen with James Bond unless the Broccoli family says so. And it's looking very unlikely right now that any future James Bond movies will go directly to streaming.
Yeah.
So, and also, we still don't know. Go ahead, Brendan.
Yeah, there was just something else I was just thinking about, is like, what about a James Bond series? But I doubt that would happen if this Broccoli family has to sign off on something like that.
I've been asked for that before, and again, I'm just talking without a quote right now. Apparently, they said they don't want to, like, weaken the James Bond brand.
Yeah, because that hasn't happened with terrible movies.
It seems that even though it's a new owner, the same contracts stay with the Broccoli family and James Bond. So, yeah, if you're thinking we're going to get day one streaming, James Bond crossover cameos and Jack Ryan, all of that, that almost certainly is not going to happen. I mean, anything could happen in the future, but it seems like none of that is going to happen. They have, the Broccolis have some really good contracts in place to do what they like with the franchise.
And that's that.
We're gonna move over to Uber, and Robin's gonna tell us about it.
Yeah. So as we all know, Uber notoriously litigious when it comes to dealing with unions. But there seems to have been a breakthrough as far as the UK is involved, and the GMB union has kind of done some good work, and now has put together a recognition deal with Uber, which will see that this trade union will start representing drivers in that region. It's a rather significant announcement. We've already seen Uber quash movements of this kind of ilk in California. Locally as well, a lot of disgruntled drivers are trying to voice their complaints, and Uber is almost turning a blind eye. That still has to play out as far as local ride-sharing services go. But yeah, as far as this announcement goes, GMB will now have access to drivers' meeting hubs and will be able to offer them support as far as dealing with Uber directly goes. If, for example, they lose access to the app, the GMB will then start interacting with Uber on their behalf. We're also going to potentially see quarterly meetings between Uber and the GMB to discuss driver issues and concerns. Interestingly, though, this recognition deal only pertains to Uber itself, so the ride-sharing aspect of the platform. It doesn't include the Uber Eats arm of the company. So as far as deliveries and couriers go, they don't really fall under this new recognition deal, which is a little bit, I'm not too sure why that is the case, considering there are 30,000 couriers in the UK that are part of this Uber Eats workforce. So that's a pretty sizable number. So as to why they would be excluded, I'm not too sure. There wasn't really any clarity there. But like I said, this is just, I guess, a first step in the process as far as getting Uber drivers recognized by the company as workers or employees, as opposed to just contractors, which has obviously been a very contentious point, especially when it comes to driver safety, their rights as far as being able to work. We saw during the early days of COVID-19 last year that a lot of drivers couldn't work or didn't have the capacity or simply lost that means of income. Because they were viewed as contractors by Uber, that didn't really become an issue. Uber kind of just, again, turned a blind eye to them. That kind of changed a little bit as more gig economy-related services started to pivot and do well during the pandemic. So I think some drivers have been able to still gain income, but for, again, a lot of protections that a trade union would offer are still not available to them. So it remains to be seen whether this is just a once-off case with regards to the UK or whether this will kind of permeate to other regions where Uber is operating and potentially mean that Uber will start to recognize its drivers as workers, which, in my opinion anyway, should be the case.
What's that old saying? You know, divided we beg, together we bargain. I really hope, you know, that... I'm not even joking. I really hope they can get that through, because it's funny, we also talked about Amazon. They're also famously anti-union. And so is Tesla. You know, it seems that all the big billion-dollar companies with billion-dollar leaders hate unions for some reason.
Yeah, why would you want your employees to kind of work together for the betterment of themselves? Got to keep those aspirations down, bro.
Yeah, we can hope, like you said, Robin, we can just hope that this is, you know, the start of something, and more unions can come. And because I don't think anyone wants ride sharing to go away, except maybe traditional taxi drivers. I think almost everyone, even governments, have come around to them. We want them around. We just want everyone to get a fair share.
Yeah.
But a fair share. We don't want those government people to get, you know, under the table stuff. But that's a story for another day.
One of the most important elements of a streamlined workspace is cable management. Even the most cluttered environment can look orderly and pristine with Oracle's hook and loop cable ties. And once you've bundled your cables together, you can use Oracle's desktop cable clip to ensure your cables are easily accessible. Oracle products are available from takealot.com.
So if you are a YouTube user in South Africa or anywhere outside of America, you may have gotten an email from them recently, and it was very strange how they sent out these emails, because I have three different Gmail accounts and I only use YouTube on one of them, but I got this email on all three, but I didn't get them all on the same day. I got them a few days apart.
Same here, Clinton, just so you know.
It's very weird, but that aside, if you are using it outside of America, basically this is what is happening. On the 1st of June 2021, which is next week, there will be new terms of services, and these are substantial, which we'll get into now. And if you are listening to this and some of it sounds like you've heard it before, it's because these terms of services were already in place in America from November 2020. So we're getting them very late, but they are very important, particularly around monetization, which we'll get to in a minute. Now, I'm just going to go over some stuff quickly and then we'll discuss it. But the three big points that YouTube highlights is these topics: facial recognition restrictions, YouTube's right to monetize, and royalty payments and tax withholding, which, oh, that's the big one. So in terms of facial recognition, YouTube is basically saying we already had rules in place where you couldn't collect data about other users, especially around facial recognition, and now we've just put that into clearer words. You know, simple enough. I'm sure we're all fine with that. Now, these next two ones are very, very worrisome. YouTube's right to monetize. YouTube has the right to monetize all content on the platform, and ads may appear on videos from channels not in the YouTube Partner Program. So, again, I'm going very fast. I'll put links to all of this. Basically, the YouTube Partner Program is for people who have already kind of established themselves on YouTube, and you've already made some videos, and you've already had some success, you could become part of the Partner Program, which is basically you become a contractor like YouTube. You become a contractor, I mean, like Uber we were talking about. You become a contractor for YouTube, and they will offer you monetization options for your videos. You can insert ads, or you can have other things like a channel membership or Super Chat, I think it's called on YouTube, where you can generate additional income. But again, that was for people who have already established themselves on YouTube. This new rule would allow channels who don't qualify for that to still have their content monetized, but they aren't going to be sharing that money. That's going straight to YouTube. And we'll get to that. Again, we'll discuss these points in a bit when I open up the floor. But now here's the big one: royalty payments and tax withholding. For creators entitled to revenue payments, such payments will be treated as royalties from a U.S. tax perspective, and Google will withhold taxes where required by law. So they are changing how people, this now applies to the partnership program, they are changing how your money is treated, and they are changing it to royalties. And in terms of royalties, you will now need to pay money to the IRS, the American Tax Conglomerate. What's it again? The Internal Revenue Services. That means there will be taxation without representation. The Americans love that, don't they? And again, Brendan's actually going to talk us through this, because he wrote about this back in March when this became a big issue. Brendan, do you want to tell us a bit more about that? Because this is probably the one that is the biggest BS and the most worrisome as well.
So this is all for views that come from the US specifically. So if you are a local content creator on YouTube and all of your views come from South Africa, which seems a bit strange, but let's just assume that every single one of your views comes from South Africa, you won't be taxed on those views. However, if some of your views come from the US, you will be taxed according to those views. So essentially what you need to do now, if you're on YouTube, you need to fill in a W-8BEN or W-8BEN-E form, which will it basically registers you as a taxpayer in the US. And you need to do this. If you don't do this in time, then YouTube will just hold all of your AdSense revenue that you make until you do submit it. So, for instance, as an example, right, if you earn $100 from views in the US, you now have to pay 30% if your withholding rate is 30%. So you'll need to pay YouTube $30, and then you get $70 for those views. But this is very confusing, because how are these views determined? Obviously, YouTube has a way of saying whether somebody is in the US or not. But also, another way around this is, what happens if somebody's using a VPN? Are we going to start seeing YouTubers saying, hey, don't forget to watch this on a VPN if you're inside the US, like, so that these people can get their money? And this is not just for South Africa. This is anywhere outside of the US. So if you are an international, if you live outside of the US, that I think that means Canada as well.
As we'll get to in a minute, some countries are excluded, but we'll get to that in a second.
So, it's a bit confusing. And if you know anything about the US taxation system, it's incredibly confusing. And they don't really help you in that regard. It's kind of like, okay, well, if you get it wrong, you'll go to prison. I mean, that's probably not what's going to happen here. They'll probably just reject your application.
YouTube's video about this, I just want to add, because I also want to cover ourselves, is that they give you some very, very basic plot points. I don't know what else, like bullet points about how this will work. And then they say, they give you almost zero information. And then they say, if you're confused, consult a tax specialist. And as unhelpful as that is, we kind of have to give you guys the same
advice.
Disclaimer. Anything you hear today, if you are someone on YouTube who's making any money, even if it's a single dollar or a single rand, you need to look into this yourself personally. And if you are confused, you need to consult a professional, a tax lawyer, an international tax specialist. You need to speak to someone. And we are journalists. We're not accountants, and we're not lawyers.
Financial advisors.
So please take, we're just giving you the basic facts that we have. Sorry, Brendan, I really had to add that there. Otherwise, we could get in trouble.
I do just want to talk about the tax treaties very quickly that you mentioned. So the US does have several tax treaties with several countries. Unfortunately, South Africa is not one of them, thanks to apartheid.
You see, here's another thing, right? So, again, I don't mean to cut you off here, Brendan. Certain countries will be exempt from this because they have laws that offer treaties with America. Now, when we were looking into this, apparently all the Commonwealth countries, you know, America is a Commonwealth. It was once ruled by Britain. All the Commonwealth countries are apparently exempt from this as well. Now, South Africa is a Commonwealth country. But according to certain documentation, we don't have any tax treaties. So what supersedes the law here? The lack of treaty or the Commonwealth status? We don't know. And as Brendan is sure is going to tell you now, YouTube won't tell us.
Well, we pinged a message to YouTube, or a couple of questions to YouTube, when this news first broke, and we haven't heard back from them. Hopefully, they will be a little bit more responsive once this is in effect. But, I mean, by that, it's already a little bit too late. So I just want to go over this quickly. The tax convention with South Africa from 1998. We'll have a link to the story at the bottom of the post, which contains a link to that. But that reads, currently, there is no income tax convention between the United States and South Africa. The income tax convention between the United States and South Africa of December 3rd, 1946 was terminated July 1st, 1987, pursuant to the terms of that convention and Section 313 of the Comprehensive Anti-Apartheid Act of 1986. So that's why we don't have a tax convention or a sort of treaty as a tax treaty with the U.S. So that kind of leaves us at the behest of whatever this law in the U.S. says we need to do. I do just want to circle back to the smaller creators thing, but maybe we can do that a little bit later. Robin, do you have any thoughts regarding this?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it sounds shady, purely for the fact that YouTube has done shadier things than this in the past. But I think it really does potentially set a dangerous precedent. I know that YouTube is owned by Google, which operates as a US entity. And that's probably why the IRS has gotten involved here. But are creators now going to have to start worrying about every tax revenue collection service across the globe, depending on where their views are coming into? Like I said, I think it sets a very dangerous precedent, and that's probably what I'm most concerned about.
I mean, you raise a good point, especially because, like, we see influencers using platforms like TikTok and Instagram and Twitter, and of course YouTube, to kind of spread their message about. And while all of those are based in the US, I suppose TikTok is technically in Asia. So, I mean, you raise a very important point. Like, when these countries decide that it's time for them to adhere to US law, because, I mean, I think that's another very important point to raise here, is that this law has always been in effect and only now Google is complying with it. Like, what changed between now and last year? Was there some sort of legal precedent that was set in the US? Like, they don't explain this, why this is now all of a sudden something that needs to be done, and why it's so urgent as well, because this was announced in March. It's going into effect now in June. I mean, this is hardly enough time for people to know or to prepare for this. It's just really odd.
Yeah, and it also has me worried with, I mean, this is, at the end of the day, if I'm not mistaken, you're just now losing 30% of your revenue and you're being taxed twice, because when some people read this, they're like, oh, then I don't need to pay SARS. No.
You still need to pay SARS.
If you're, you know, earning over the tax bracket that puts you, I think it's 360,000 rand a year, you still need to pay SARS. And I would recommend, if you are getting money from overseas in any capacity, you register with SARS.
Yeah.
Again, that's just what I've heard from professionals. Please take everything we say with a grain of salt. But you will, as far as I can see from what YouTube has pointed out, and if I'm wrong, I want to blame YouTube because they haven't been very clear. This looks like you will be taxed twice, once in America and once in South Africa.
I mean, it doesn't help if you only get taxed in the US because that money needs to come back to South Africa. So are they going to tax, is SARS going to tax YouTube? I mean, it's all just so confusing. And it, just to me, what really grates me about this is that it's a US company assuming that everybody knows how their backwards tax system works and is going to be okay with this. And they're just providing little to no information. Like, oh, well, you guys can learn.
Yeah, consult a tax specialist.
No, YouTube, that's not right. You need to actually be clear about this, or otherwise people are just going to leave the platform. I mean, I know that's big talk from the biggest video sharing platform in the world, but I mean things like Odyssey are really starting to take off. If you don't know what Odyssey is, it's a blockchain based video sharing service. That is similar to YouTube in many ways and a lot better than YouTube in a number of other ways. It's starting to gain traction. And I feel like moves like this from YouTube, and I understand that it's something that they need to do, but on the same token, can you give your users a bit more information, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I love YouTube. I like YouTube more than almost every other social media platform. But if I was somebody who wanted to make content on the internet right now in terms of video, I would not even look at YouTube. I would only look at Twitch. I really don't like live content, but Twitch has proven time and time again it will take better care of you than YouTube. So
yeah,
they just keep making decisions that push people away. It's very strange.
I just want to also circle back, Clinton. You mentioned the ads on non-partner videos. Like you mentioned, this was announced in November 2020, and at the time, I thought that this would be really, really bad for smaller creators. And the closer that this deadline gets, the more it seems like that, especially with this tax thing in. So in order to be eligible for the YouTube Partner Program, you need to live in a country or region where the YouTube Partner Program is available. You need to have more than 4,000 valid public watch hours in the last 12 months. You need to have more than 1,000 subscribers. And you need to have a linked AdSense account. Now, that is only just for you to start earning money. And that amount of money can range from $1 to $10,000, depending on how many views you have, how many ads run on your content, all this sort of stuff, right? Now, if you get a check from Google of $1, that means you need to pay 30 cents of that to Google. And then you need to pay SARS a portion of that as well. And at the end of the day, you might as well have not made the video because you've paid more tax than you've actually earned.
And that's even assuming, I hear this all the time, where people's videos are demonetized for no reason at all. Even if they follow their rules to the T, you can just be demonetized because YouTube doesn't do this manually. Its algorithms do it. And it could, I don't know, it could look at a picture of some bottles in your room and it can determine that that is, you know, some kind of sexual organ and it will demonetize you. But it won't tell you why it demonetized you. It will just take away your money.
At the weekend, there was an incident involving a really big YouTuber, the channel's name is Some Ordinary Gamers, who covered a scam, a financial scam that was being circled around online. And his video got demonetized because YouTube thought that he was trying to further the scam.
You saw that. Now that you're talking about it, I also saw that on Twitter. It's hilarious how bad their decision-making is. And yeah. I remember at the start of the pandemic, YouTube said that it would demonetize any video talking about COVID. And then everyone started to say, but what about people who are making proper content to help people?
Yeah.
And then the less savory channels on YouTube just got around it anyway. I remember some craft channels were saying, oh, here's how to make, you know, hand sanitizer, but nowhere did it talk about COVID or the pandemic. It got around it by using synonyms, And then on top of that, they made money on that video. And the information in that video was wrong because it was showing you how to make hand sanitizer that didn't kill the COVID virus. Everything they do is wrong. I don't understand it. It's like there's an algorithm in charge of YouTube that is presented all the options and always chooses the worst option. It really feels like that's how that site is operated right now. It's infuriating.
Yeah. And I mean, the other part of this is that to be eligible to join YouTube's partner program, you need to observe their monetization policies, which are, I don't know, it feels like they were written by Tipper Gore back in the 90s. And some of the stuff, you can follow these to a T, and then you can still get your video demonetized because you're covering news. A YouTuber that I follow quite closely, Philip DeFranco, his videos get demonetized so often, and all the dude does is cover the news. Doesn't say like, oh, you should make hand sanitizer that doesn't actually kill the virus. You should watch, what is it, One News America, or that OAN. That channel that just like spread fake news on YouTube, like it just boggles the mind how it's like, please adhere to these policies, but then we could also demonetize you for anything. That's not even taking into account folks like Universal and Sony, who demonetize content because you've got 3.5 seconds of their music in your video. It's a wild west. That's a massive,
irritating conversation for another day. Yeah. All of YouTube's algorithms to try and protect itself end up screwing people over every single time. I can't think of one time where they ever made a change and it benefited people on the platform. I also want to talk about something that happened quite a while ago in July of 2020, where there was a joke on YouTube that was more truth than joke. And the joke is that every video, no matter how little the content of the video is, they always wanted it to be more than 10 minutes. And the reason for that is if your video is longer, it qualifies for something called mid-roll ads, which are ads that appear, as you may have guessed, in the middle of the video and not at the beginning or at the end, which is where the advert usually goes. Mid-rolls were only for 10-minute videos or longer. And if your video was like an hour long, you could have multiple mid-roll ads and make more money. You know, again, you know, we have to point out that we as a site also use adverts. We know they're not the best way, but it's a way to make money on the internet, and you have to do it to support the content you like. Anyway, back in July, this was shortened to 8 minutes. And the problem with that is, one, as the consumer, you're going to see more ads. And two, as the people making the videos, some of these mid-roll ads were applied automatically. So if you made a video 5 years ago that was 8 minutes long, it could have now had an ad placed in automatically by YouTube. And another thing, why this was done automatically is YouTube wanted to, I can't say this for certain, the consensus from people I spoke to, including people who make, you know, YouTube content, was that there are a lot of videos that were uploaded and then abandoned by the uploader, and they had gone on to become viral, to get millions of views, but YouTube wasn't making money off of them because for YouTube to make money off of a video, it has to be monetized. So this automatic monetization allowed them to make money, mid-roll ads, off of old viral videos, and now they just skipped that completely with these new terms of services that are saying, we can monetize your videos anywhere we want. And that's why we're coming back. YouTube's right to monetize. We can monetize all content on the platform. And again, that's going back to those mid-roll ads. You've got so many videos that have been either abandoned by their users, their uploaders, I mean, or you have content where someone might say, you know, this is my artistic view. I don't want any adverts to be on this. But now YouTube can go and put adverts on it anyway. And again, this affects us because we as Hypertext have a YouTube channel, but we don't use it to play ads and to make money. We use it as a hosting platform for videos that we want for our written stories. But now YouTube can just put ads on them as they please. And we've always put in our YouTube description of the videos, if you see an ad running on this page, something has gone wrong, please let us know. But now, because YouTube can put those ads there, it might be working as intended from their side, which again is infuriating. You should have just used Vimeo this whole time.
I do just also want to point out one more thing that has recently been added to YouTube, and I hate it with a burning passion, and that's shorts. Which, if you don't know what they are basically TikTok videos on YouTube, and they aren't longer than a minute, maybe even 30 seconds. And with this monetization policy in place, are those videos going to be monetized? Am I going to see an advert that is longer than the actual video I'm watching?
So that's another thing that's hilarious. Again, I go back to that half joke, but mostly truth, that YouTube has always wanted long form content. And I wanted to talk about it now, but I can't find it. A while ago, YouTube put out a video saying, according to our algorithm, this is stuff that makes money and this is stuff which makes less money. And on it, they put make the longest videos possible, because the longer a person is watching your video, the more adverts they can watch and the more money you'll make. And for, I would say, the last 5 years or more, the trend on YouTube is to put out hours of content every day if possible. I know that's not feasible, but that's what they wanted. So that's how YouTube has progressed. But now they say, oh no, now we just want videos that are less than a minute. They just pull the rug out of you. Imagine you base your entire content creation on making long videos, and then they say, oh no, sorry, we really, really want you to make short stuff now. That's what's making us money. We want to compete with TikTok. The worst possible decisions at every opportunity.
Absolutely. Robin, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, we haven't
been quite quiet. Sorry, we've taken over this podcast.
Yeah, I think Brendan and I watch a lot of YouTube, so we have a lot of strong feelings about this stuff.
Yeah, no, for me, it's just, I would hate to be a content creator at the moment. It feels like, you guys are saying, the rug's being pulled from under you. And we get a lot of press releases from YouTube's local PR, and a lot of the time it's talking about how YouTube is for the creators, it's creator-driven, it wants to do the best for creators. But policies like this clearly show that it's not. It is an advertiser-driven platform.
Mm-hmm.
And you wonder why the likes of TikTok and Twitch are thriving. And people are starting to leave the platform, starting to leave YouTube. It makes total sense. Creators are leaving, and I know we're talking way down the line here, but eventually the people that watch your content are going to leave as well. So there's a serious disconnect, and once again, YouTube has shown that it has an inability to police its own platform.
It's not even just police. It's just to maintain some fraction of control over its own platform. I mean, the algorithm runs rampant. They don't listen to what creators are saying. I mean, that example I spoke about with some ordinary gamers, he's a relatively big YouTube channel, thanks to having beef with some notable persons on the platform in previous years. But he's a relatively big YouTuber. And for somebody like that to have to reach out and struggle to get hold of somebody at YouTube, what about the smaller creators? You know, the guys that only have like 10,000 subscribers but are making some really, really good content, and those subscribers are constantly coming back to them and their content is monetized. What about those folks, you know? I mean, even lower than that, what about folks that are just getting into the platform? I mean, for years there's been this kind of trend where folks quit their jobs and go into making YouTube content full-time. Is that something that is now just dead? Like, are we not going to see the next Philip DeFranco because it's just not a viable way for somebody to get a following on YouTube? I mean, it sucks because it's such a great platform for finding content. Like Clinton said, like, it's probably one of my favorite social media sites. It's the one that I'm on constantly. When I open my browser, it is set that the first tab that opens up is YouTube, because it's such a great resource, whether it's for memes and jokes or whether you want to learn something or keep up with current affairs. Like, it is a fantastic platform, but unfortunately the people behind it, Google in this instance, are just making decisions that make it a worse place to be for both viewers and for creators alike.
And I've thought this for a very long time, but do you guys actually think that YouTube has become too successful and too big for its own good?
Absolutely.
I do think it in the evil way where, oh, we have so much money and there's no competitors, we can do whatever we want. But I also think about it in a practical way, right? Where else can you go and make a 10-hour video that's a meme? Like, you know, Shrek says ogres Donkey. Are like onions.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a 10-hour loop, because that's a meme. And you can just upload this 100 gig file and not have to pay for it, right? YouTube is one of the only places you can do that. And that stuff takes up money.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, everything that's uploaded has to sit on the server, and YouTube can't just delete a video, although that does happen sometimes. Again, the algorithm does a lot of weird stuff. But if you are just a random person on the street and you want to upload a 10-hour video, YouTube will be like, okay, we'll do that for you. And at the end of the day, they need to buy a server to hold that video. And again, I mentioned Twitch and how if I wanted to, you know, start making stuff, I'd go to Twitch. But a lot of people have come to realize that the experience of watching and streaming on Twitch in South Africa is god-awful. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Because YouTube has local South African servers and Twitch doesn't. And those servers need to be paid for at the end of the day. You know, even though Google is one of the richest companies in the world, they are still a business and they're not doing this out of the goodness of their hearts. Someone has to pay for those servers.
That's a really good point, Clinton. And I think that's something that folks overlook a lot of the time. Just to give you an example, right? I'm looking at a 2-minute, 47-second full HD video file running at 20 frames per second with a bitrate of 317 kilobytes. And that file is 200 megabytes in size, right? So, I mean, once you make that a 4K file or whatever, it starts to get huge. And I think the other thing that a lot of folks don't realize is, when last did anybody use Vimeo? Just as the room, anybody used Vimeo recently?
Much more prominent in the market a few years ago, and they've just continued to fade.
Robin? Only to watch some Matt Reeves, the Batman-related content.
So
that was it, really.
So I would urge you to go and watch a video on Vimeo. Just any video, and then go and watch a video on YouTube and just compare how quickly YouTube's video loads. Like, there's a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes that YouTube has introduced over the years that has made the user experience so much better. Things like autoplay, being able to change what speed the video plays at. There's so many features that have just been built into YouTube over the years that other platforms simply don't have yet. I mean, like Clinton mentioned, with Twitch, you have a situation where we don't have local servers. So streaming to Twitch or streaming from Twitch in South Africa is a headache. I still to this day don't understand why South Africans insist on streaming on Twitch when it is the most appalling experience for locals. Whereas if you stream on something like YouTube, which does have a local presence, it's a lot easier and it's a lot better.
Comparison.
Yeah, it's apples and oranges comparing the two, and it's because YouTube has invested, and Google by extension, have invested a lot of money into this platform. And as Robin says, I think it was a very important point to raise, is that they have become so big that they now have to start paying for all of this stuff. Right? And I know that Google develops a lot of its infrastructure in-house, and it runs a lot of its own data centers. But that stuff still costs money. It doesn't just appear out of nowhere, and you have to offset that cost somehow. So
I don't have the numbers in front of me. Again, we just ran out of time to find those links. But if I'm remembering correctly, YouTube doesn't even run at a profit. Those servers are so expensive to keep going that YouTube just operates it as a loss as part of its portfolio, because it's a big part of their portfolio and they make their money in other places. It is so expensive to make video work because it's the most demanding format. It's not like images. It's not like Instagram, where it's just images and text. Video is very difficult. Mm-hmm. And someone has to pay the piper, and that's YouTube. And sometimes they make dumb decisions because it needs to bring in money.
So I have a bit of a question. Do we think that with all this advertising that is now coming onto YouTube, do you think that more people will pick up a YouTube Premium subscription?
Yeah, that was something we've neglected to even speak about. A lot of conspiracy theories were they've done all of this stuff to push YouTube Premium so you can watch without ads. And I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, again, to pay for those servers, a monthly subscription is more reliable for the bank than, you know, having people watch half of a video, an ad, and then the ad brings in, half a dollar, and then you need to split that half a dollar between YouTube and the tax and the people who made it. And so are they doing it to make money? Yeah. But
there's YouTube... also the other side of that, Clinton, is that if you have money coming directly from subscribers, you don't need to rely on advertisers. And that means that you don't need to worry about advertisers putting out because their Coca-Cola adverts appeared alongside PewDiePie or whatever, you know?
And if I'm not mistaken, the way it works is that if you have YouTube Premium, YouTube will at all, you know, every time you log on, it will monitor which channels you watch. And then the content creators who made those videos get a percentage of your subscription money in terms of watch time. That may have changed recently, but that's how I understand it. So if you're logging into YouTube every day and watching only two channels, in theory, your 100 Rand subscription should go 50 Rand there, 50 Rand there after YouTube has taken its cut. So it's a more direct way to support the creators you like. But it's still less direct than Patreon and some other donation things.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a lot of stuff. Again, we'll have links to everything. Just want to do final thoughts quick. I'm going to start with you, Robin, again. What do you think about all of this? And again, all of us here have a YouTube account and we watch YouTube occasionally. This stuff goes into effect automatically. You don't need to click I agree like on WhatsApp with the recent Facebook controversy. It will apply automatically. What do you think about that, Robin, to final thoughts here?
Yeah, I think specifically the point around the tax has been purely communicated or insufficiently communicated by YouTube. And I really feel for content creators who are going to suffer long term as far as jumping through all these hoops go. I understand why YouTube needs revenue, it does, but at the same time, they're making things exceedingly difficult for the creators it says that it cares for.
And you, Brendan, closing thoughts on all this mess?
I just wish YouTube would listen to its creators a little bit more often. I keep saying it, but it really does feel like YouTube makes decisions and then consults with the community afterwards and then backtracks those decisions or makes changes as it needs to. But I really just wish that they would stop doing that and maybe just talk to people, because the people who understand your platform best are the people who are using it every day. The people who are encountering the problems that you think you are solving. Unfortunately, I don't feel like any of this is a solution to anything other than maybe YouTube's monetization woes and revenue woes. But for creators and users, it just means more ads more often. And for creators, it means less money for those ads if you're outside of the US and views are coming from the US. So I really just wish YouTube was a bit more clearer and B, communicated more with its users. I know that Susan and Team YouTube often have creator talks and all that sort of stuff, but it's not good enough. Like a video that doesn't address anything, and every so often, I mean, it's you can see this by the way media publications react when the CEO of YouTube, Susan Wojcicki, I don't know how to say her surname. I'm sorry, Susan. But whenever she says something about YouTube that isn't mentioned in official documents, people go mad because it's, hey, there's finally some insights into YouTube. We need a bit more of that from this company. I know that's asking a lot from Silicon Valley, but yeah, I just wish it's a great platform. It's a great way for people who have amazing ideas to bring them to reality. But it's becoming more and more difficult for those people to carve out a name for themselves on YouTube when it's just, well, we're going to advertise and you can't earn money off of it.
On top of all of that, I'm just going to end off saying, YouTube South Africa, please respond to our email, our request for comment. And please just tell us if we are involved in the Commonwealth stuff, because if you can come out and say, South Africans, part of the Commonwealth, don't need to do the IRS tax stuff. It will take a huge burden off the shoulders of all the content creators I know. Please just respond to our email. Please, I showed you my request. Please reply. But that's going to be it for the Africast today. Again, we mention it all the time, but if you want to know more about anything we discussed, links to all of that will be under the podcast. So I'm going to sign off for today. For myself, for Brendan.
Cheerio.
for Robin.
Stay warm, everyone.
And for the entirety of Hypertext, we'll see you next week. Goodbye, everybody.
If you're one of those users who makes use of portable hard drives, make sure you safeguard it with a 2.5-inch Orico nylon portable hard drive case. Available in 4 colors, it's an inexpensive solution to keep your data safe. For an added layer of protection, Orico also has the 2.5 USB 3.0 external HDD enclosure. Excited to try out the range of Orico products? They're all available from Takealot.com.